Many of us love to be outdoors, but stop to think for a second. What specifically do we love about being out there? Lots of things. The trees, the streams, the mountains, and in some cases, the dirt. The brown stuff beneath our feet is the star of a book full of essays called Dirt, A Love Story. 36 Writers Get Down to Earth. Barbara Richardson is the editor, and Jeannie Rogers is one of the contributors. They're both in the studio with me. Barbara Richardson writes of loving life in the West. Her two novels are Tributary and Guest House. She edited another anthology out last year called I Am With You, Love Letters to Cancer Patients. Jeannie Rogers is a writer and a painter with a poetry collection and a memoir, Changing Course, in print. Welcome to you, Barbara.
Thank you so much.
And welcome to you, Jeannie.
Thank you.
Glad to have you both here. Jeannie, Changing Course is about you working on an oil tanker.
Yes.
Correct? How much did you miss soil while you were on an oil tanker?
That's a really good question. By the end of my two-month stint, I was really hungry to see something vertical. So, because it's just the long, flat horizon. So when we'd come near land, even if it was just an ugly steel building, you know, it was just good to see anything that was on the land.
I remember the feeling from the last time I was out on a cruise that had 2 days at sea. It's like, you know, I could stand to see a tree about now.
Exactly.
That sort of thing. Barbara, did you, like Jeannie, grow up someplace in the West?
I grew up all over the United States because my father was in the military, but we landed in Utah when I was 10. So I spent a lot of time in the Salt Lake Valley.
Mm-hmm. And easy to develop a love for the West once you've been other places and get a chance to look at what life is like here.
Yeah, no place is like the West. It's mm-hmm. It's truly home.
So this is an early favorite for the title of the year, Dirt, A Love Story. But I thought that you calling it Dirt Devalued Soil. How did we end up with this title?
Don't get me into the dirt soil debate quite this early. So
It's later in the book. We'll get to it again.
Yeah, the working title was Dirt, A Love Story. And then when I shipped it out to the publishers, I changed it to Loving Dirt because I somehow thought that was more engaging. And when University Press of New England saw the manuscript, they read it, they loved it, they said, this is elegant, this is classy, but we want to change your title. We want to call it Dirt, A Love Story. And I thought, okay, it's fate. You know? So,
there's also a description here of humus, one of the many terms for dirt or soil, and you have some interesting discussions of the root of humus.
Humus, humulus, humility, lowliness, dirt, and really, dirt only got a bad rap as time evolved. The origin of the word. Is human. I mean, human and humus in dirt. Like we are, there's a person who has a radio show in Bend and he signs off saying, we are conscious dirt. We are conscious dirt?
Yep.
We are conscious dirt. And I have never been a snob about the difference between dirt and soil. Dirt is the parent material. Dirt is that from which soil emerges. So it was very interesting having scientists come and write essays for this book, and they retained a little bit of their soil snobbery, which triggered all my red lights, because I'm not an expert, but by golly, dirt is what I love. So
what is the concept of the book? I mean, how did the idea first come together? And I mean, how do you decide to make a book about dirt, and how do you get a publishing company and writers and editors all to go, okay.
I think the time was right, which has never happened with any of my other books. They were all long labors of agonized love. But this time, I lived in Boulder. I was a landscape designer for 15 years, and I had just quit landscape design. So I didn't have other people's dirt to play in. And I lived in a little townhome with a postage stamp yard. And after 1 year, I was just desperate to get a shovel in the soil. So I begged my neighbors to give me their 10-by-14 plot of grass. I said, I'll turn it into a vegetable garden. They said, great, we have a toddler. So I spent 2 weeks digging up sod, and I sent so many ecstatic emails to my friend, the writer Jana Richman. She said, Richardson, you've got to write about this, which I thought she meant you need to publish a book about dirt. She later told me, no, all I meant is take your journal out there and sit down for half an hour and write a few pages and get over it and get back to literary writing. She didn't tell me that until way later. So I think when I stopped landscape design, then the expression went into, what do other people love about dirt? I wasn't about to write the whole book. I knew what I thought about dirt. But what do other people love about dirt? So I asked scientists I knew. I asked artists I knew. I asked writers I knew. And then the responses were so great, I got gutsy and asked complete and absolute strangers. And almost everyone that I asked did have a story to tell about dirt, and I was dying to be in the book. So it was easy peasy.
Did you end up with more people who wanted to contribute than you had space for?
After the fact. So I when I submitted to the University President of England, I had about 30, and they said, we need more. We need Southern writers. We need Northeastern writers. So I added more. And then once the book was complete and I started sending it out for blurbs, like everyone was like, why am I not in this book? Why are you asking me to write about this book? I should have been in this book. So a lot of dirt nerds out there hiding in the bushes.
I sense a Dirt 2 coming.
It could be Dirt 45.
Dirt 2, a continuing love story. It's the Dirt series.
The continuing love story.
In the preface that you wrote, Barbara, you write that dirt anchors us all in reality. How?
Well, here's the deal. This is my particular prejudice. I didn't come to dirt until I was 30, and then I didn't really, until about 4 years ago, I never really got down in the dirt. Like, I worked the dirt, and I ran landscape crews, but about 4 years ago, Facebook, good old Facebook, there was a post that said, Native American elders say we need to get our bellies down in the dirt and say thank you. And just some little thing went off in my head, and now I do it every quarter moon. I just lie with, no, even if it's rainy, if it's muddy, if it's stormy, if it's whatever, I put my stomach down in the dirt and relax a bit and say thank you 3 times. And it is cosmic. I'm telling you, it is like you can worship the heavens and what kind of ever deities you want to place up there, but dirt is so real and so huge and so free and so giving, and it creates everything that we love. So I just thought I would bring my worship tendencies literally down to earth.
All right, one of the major points in Dirt, a Love Story, is 36 Writers Getting Down to Earth by subtitle. Barbara and Jeannie will be actually tonight at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland at 7 o'clock for a reading and signing event. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back from this break. We'll talk more about Dirt, a Love Story with Barbara and Jeannie and you in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our subject matter in this hour is dirt. No other better way to say it. And it is actually a series of 36 essays by 36 different writers in a book called Dirt, a Love Story. Barbara Richardson is the editor, and she's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. And Jeannie Rogers is one of the contributing writers. She is with us as well. So, Barbara, you were just talking about put your belly on the ground and say thank you. Mm-hmm. Quarterly. You do this 4 times a year.
No, 4 times a month.
Four times a month?
Every moon, the phase of the moon. That's just what reminds me. And the smells and the texture and it's truly a loving feeling to just be so absolutely connected, and all the claptrap in your head goes away, and it's my religion.
I'm glad you got back to the claptrap in your head part, because that was something I wanted to ask about. It's because it really does take stuff out of you. It removes the bad parts, it sounds like, when you get down in the dirt. Who are you saying thank you to, though?
I'm just saying thank you to everything. And honestly, the sense of connectedness, which we don't often feel during the day because our brains do take us in crazy directions, but it's just so wonderful to feel the boundaries expand and you're as big as the earth and beyond, because all the dirt on the earth has come from the stars and traveled all over. So it's just, it's real cosmic. It's not like woo-woo cosmic. It's like just real, and it smells so good.
Any book of essays is going to be divided into sections, and this one is. How did you divide it up?
It was all just organic. Oh my gosh, there's that word. I swear, this book just dirt just picked me up and told me to do this. And then as each essay came in, I was so excited and thrilled, and the 5 sections just came to me naturally. And so as an essay came in, I thought, oh my gosh, that belongs in dirt worship. Oh my goodness, that belongs in kids stuff. Like tonight, we'll be reading with John Keeble. He's a distinguished professor of literature, creative writing, and his essay talks about digging with a stick in the dirt as a kid at 5 years age to try to understand the notion of death and eternity. I mean, it's just so beautiful watching these professional scientists, and there's a sculptor and there's a Sufi master, talk about the impact that dirt has had on their life.
Since you mentioned John Keeble, let's go to his essay, because he talks about the desert, and it makes me wonder if our experiences with dirt are as different as the kind of dirt that we spend time with.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah, and that's what's so beautiful about these essays. There is a little bit of overlap, of course. Some people are farmers and et cetera, but, and some people have a more scientific background, but the particular dirt that they bonded with gives rise to so many different experiences. And at readings, I've had people say, oh, yeah, I remember I was 12 years old and I lived on a farm and I would go in the pig pen and wallow in the mud with the pigs when I was 12, and it was the most beautiful experience of my life. I mean, wow. So, yeah.
So most people have dirt stories, it sounds like. Although, you know, funny you should mention it just at the time we're talking about being in the pig waller, but it is John Keeble who points out that the word dirt itself actually comes from a root meaning excrement.
Drit, meaning excrement. Well, because, okay, here, let's just get the debate out there. Dirt is the parent material. Soil is fertile dirt. So for dirt to become what we supposedly know and love, to produce life, it has to have dead matter in it. So it has to have excrement. It has to have dead leaves. It has to have detritus. So the whole process, it's like the giant cosmic process of birth, death, birth, death, and that is how you create more life.
Since the book is divided into sections, I mean, do the poets get to sneak in with the scientists? Or are they off in their own section?
Everyone's all shaken up like a big salt shaker. And someone did complain recently. Why isn't there more poetry in it? But you have to have some limitations. So literally the only poem that sort of crept in was from a Zen architect, a green architect who's a Zen teacher. And he wrote his essay in poetry form. But it is not a book of poetry. It could be Dirt 42 or 43 poems about dirt. Yeah, these are essays about dirt.
Why don't you grab some headphones, and we'll invite one of our first callers onto the line. We are talking to Barbara Richardson and Jeannie Rogers. Barbara is the editor, and Jeannie's one of the contributors to Dirt, A Love Story. Here's a call from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
You know, there are so many fun things you can talk about when you get down and dirty like this. It's remarkable. I've got a quote here I've had up forever in my office. And it goes this way: whatever our accomplishments, our sophistication, our artistic pretension, we owe our very existence to a 6-inch layer of topsoil and the fact
that it rains. Yeah, that is in the book. Thank you so much for quoting that. Yes, it is.
Is it? Well, uh-huh. It's been on my desk for 20 years.
Wonderful.
Every time I look at it, it kind of puts me back in perspective.
Yeah, let's go ahead and be humble and admit that we're dirt. I mean, it's a magnificent place from which to operate. It's a humble
absolutely,
place.
Absolutely, absolutely. The question that I have has to do with changes in the soil, changes in the dirt. We're seeing some alarming trends of heavy metals and fly ash showing up in our soil out here in the West. Did any of your authors approach that or address that?
Yes, many of the scientists do indeed talk about soil degradation and soil problems. But the focus of the book was, for me, was very important to get people's hearts stimulated to remember and love dirt. That's why it's in the title. So even the scientists, when they're talking about soil degradation and soil loss, they're also offering hope. They're offering suggestions. The very last essay is a Tina Diffley, who's a organic farmer in Minnesota. And the Koch brothers were going to put a pipeline right through the middle of their 80 organic acres. And it's the story of how she is my superhero. She fought the Koch brothers off with litigation and public outcry. And she had new legislation enacted in Minnesota, which is now spread across the United States, that organic soil is protectable and should be a commodity and a resource that we love and appreciate. So I was weeping when I read her essay. So yes, you will find facts about the problems, but we really tried to focus on what loving dirt can do, because there's actually a book out there now called The Soil Will Save Us. And if we switch our farming practices, we can literally change the nasty carbon loop that we've got going on. So thank you so much for asking that.
Super, super, super. And I'm looking forward to reading the book.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Paul. Good to hear from you. This is the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. Join our discussion about Dirt, A Love Story with the editor, Barbara Richardson. She's also wrote one of the essays herself, and Jeannie Rogers wrote another one of the essays. I wondered how much metaphorical rolling in the dirt there'd be, and the first essay answers that on page 3 with Edward Kanzi, is it?
Ed Kanz, yes, a naturalist from the Adirondacks.
He brings up a great point. With a firm basis in science, dirt's good for us. I mean, aside from the fact that it provides places to grow food and all that, but the fact is that dirt is actually a good thing to have around.
Yeah, you don't want to separate yourself from the bioactivities and all the organic processes, and because we've done that, our digestions are poorer, our health is poorer, and many essays allude to that. You just need to get your gut biome and the earth biome in sync. Yeah.
So it sounds like the 4 times a month routine of getting in the dirt might be helpful for that.
And the 15 years of digging in dirt and ordering crews to dig more dirt, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe not actually going out and eating mud pies is probably not a... not a direct one. You're looking at each other like this is something. Oh, I hit a secret here.
Well, all my years in landscaping, I never did this, but I just bought a quarter of an acre of land in a cute little town in the middle of nowhere, Utah. And once I walked the property line, I just thought, this is not good enough. I'm going to taste it. So and my soil there is gorgeous, brownish black, lovely, like chocolate cake mix. But I tasted the dirt in every corner of the property, so I know what my dirt tastes like. And it tastes like dark chocolate and black coffee. And I even let a guy at a reading taste my dirt. Like he couldn't believe I'd done it, so he says, let me taste it. And he puts his finger in it, licks it, and I looked at him, and I said, what does it taste like? And he looked at me, and I said, I was thinking dark chocolate and coffee. He said, I got the coffee.
So. That might be the all-time best quote on the Jefferson Exchange. I let a guy at a reading taste my dirt. We have a new one for the Hall of Fame here today. Some of the stuff in here is just, I mean, aside from, you know, getting out from just the wallowing in the dirt part of things, but just people's experiences that come through in these essays. Linda Hogan writes of hearing earthworms.
Yes. Yeah. Hearing them tumbling in the dark. Yep.
Wow. I didn't even think that was possible. No. Those big worms or just a lot of them? Or...
Can't comment on that. That's Linda. I mean, everyone has the. I mean, one of the essays is about termites and the universal magnificent work of termites returning books to dirt. I mean, who? I would have never thought that was a possibility in my lifetime. But yeah,
she points out that worms can be bad for forests. This was news to me.
Oh yeah. And that's in several essays. Earthworms were introduced. There is a native worm. There are native worms, but. Earthworms were introduced in the ballast of ships as they came over to the New World, and once they trekked very slowly, because worms are slow, into the forests in the east, they transform the forest because they consume the detritus, and that causes different conditions for different sort of growing. And there's one whole essay called Earth Mover that is about earthworms and the good and the bad of earthworms.
So they change the soil enough to change the growing conditions.
Absolutely, yeah, and it can decimate forests.
Jeannie, I've been leaving you out of this conversation thus far. I
mean, that's fine.
Is there a playing in the dirt that you go for? I mean, is there a ritual or something or at least a regular contact with it that is meaningful to you?
My regular contact is growing beautiful perennials and trees. And I move a lot, so I have a lot of chances to do that. I'm hoping to stay in Ashland for a while because I have a big lot. And I've only planted in the first, I'd say, quarter part of my land. So I'll be here a while.
Why do you move a lot?
I don't know.
Because she loves dirt so much she can't stay in one particular part of it.
In different places. Going back to the tasting dirt, you know, is there a spit bucket involved? You don't actually swallow, right?
I just put my hand in the dirt. And again, my dirt is so exquisitely beautiful, anyone would want to eat it. But I just lick my finger. And yes, there's the gritty, but there's the flavor underneath, which is all the organisms in there doing their little dirt dance.
Let's talk about when each of you got into being in the dirt, because I've often wondered, particularly after reading this book, if it's the kind of thing you have by the time you're 10 years old. So let's talk about each of you and your dirt experiences as a youngster, Jeannie.
Well, I grew up on a farm in the Midwest, outside of Chicago, and we had 450 acres. And so in addition to the farmers, it was a communal farm, the Quaker Oats Research Farm, so it was huge. Doing their big thing, we had a 60 by 30 foot garden, family garden plot. And my job was to take care of the plants. So weeding, thinning, picking, and then canning and freezing. So I spent a lot of time thinning plants, garden, bent over. I just thought everybody did it until I met town kids.
Was it the kind of thing you wanted to get away from, though, because you'd been made to do it when you were a kid?
Well, I loved it. I loved it for a long time until my grandma died, and then when she was buried and I saw that dirt go on top of her, I divorced land for a while.
Mm-hmm. But you came back to dirt.
I came back to dirt.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever, I mean, of all the places you've been, since you moved so much, you both have, I guess. Have either of you met a dirt you didn't like? Was there a dirt that just was too foreign or too alien to you?
There's been some dirt, like in Boise, Idaho. At first, I didn't like the dirt because it was so hard clay that it was the only dirt I couldn't dig myself. I had to hire a real strong guy with a pickaxe to come and break up the beds for me. And then I had to amend it a lot with compost before anything would grow. Hmm. Yeah. So it was as hard as this table. It was crazy.
Wow, that is hard soil. Barbara, for you, you mentioned coming into the studio that you acquired a taste, literally, for dirt later in life, though.
I did, although I just had a flashback hearing Jeannie. So, I mean, yes, I started landscape design at 30, and it was like a total sanity saver to be able to be out in the dirt and work out of doors. I have to do that. But I just recall with you asking, is there a dirt you didn't love? So I think my prejudice against scientists who are prejudiced against dirt opposed to soil, because soil is so fecund and dirt is not. When I was 8 or 10, in order to stay sane, I would run up into the foothills in Utah. And there were these particular cliffs that had eroded terribly, and there was huge, you know, dirty, sandy washes. And we would climb through the scrub oak and leap off into space and fall into this non-fecund dirt and just roll our little bodies down the mountainside. And I did that hour after hour, and I think that is where my allegiance really kicked in. But then I didn't realize it till I was 30, and then dirt didn't make me write a book till I was almost 58.
Dirt made me write a book.
Dirt made me write a book.
We're coming up with great quotes today here on the Jefferson Exchange with Barbara Richardson, the editor, and Jeannie Rogers, one of the contributors to Dirt, A Love Story, 36 Writers Get Down to Earth. Let's see. Janice Ray's story about her hoarding parents. How did that get into a book about dirt?
She was one of the last contributors that I got, and she's very famous, and I was very shocked she said yes. But she wrote The Ecology of a Cracker Childhood, a memoir which just took the nation by storm, about growing up with in a garbage dump with her parents. And so people knew her as a kind of an earthy backwoods person. And now she has a beautiful organic farm with her husband, but her parents still live in the dump and still collect, and can't get rid of anything. So her essay was about going home to work with, she won't call them hoarders, her siblings call them hoarders, but she went home to work with her parents and literally witnessed the hundreds and hundreds of books. When her books went into, when her books were going out of print, her dad bought all of the backstock and hoarded, you know, put them in a shed. And Janice discovered them like going to tatters with their covers falling off. And she writes an exquisite, exquisite essay about that process of termites turning literature back into the soil from which it came.
Everything going back to dirt, in essence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kinds of dirt, though. We learned from Erica Olson, there's loess and there's midden, and there's all sorts of other terms for soil and dirt that we might not have heard before.
I love her essay. It's very brainy and very wry and very hilarious. And several authors, Ed Cans and several other authors as well as Erica, talk about loess soils. Now, you can pronounce it lurs or loess or loess. This is all new to me, but at least three essays talk about loess because basically, can I read a little bit of Ed Cans?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, cool. I was going to read this tonight, darn it. Anyway, I won't read that.
Well, it's okay, because not everybody's going to make it to Ashland tonight.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah, so, we got people from Mendocino to Eugene who are not going to
make it. Oh, beautiful. So here's what Ed Cans says. Thank heaven for dirt, literally. What is it after all but stardust? Some of it sifted just last night out of the cold, black, intergalactic void, and the rest fell from the cosmos last week, last century, last millennium, or a billion years ago. Vintage dirt has covered ground. Organisms of one kind or another gathered and ingested it and built the useful elements they gleaned from it into living tissue. Then came death, but the dirt played on. Liberated once more, these fragments of asteroid, comet, and supernova circulated anew and were drawn into new lives again and again, on and on and on, from the beginnings of biological time until the present day. From here to eternity, or at least the biological equivalent of eternity, the dirt will rock on, continuing to bring grace to those who borrow it a while. And Ed does talk about the loess soils, and John Keeble talks about the loess soils, and Erica, that nothing's local. It all, it's like this beautiful ocean of particles that have little flecks of life, and that's what we're from.
Flowing. Ultimately,
it's a flow.
But not in a way that we can perceive.
Scientists love to try to track that loess soil. And big problems in the Midwest where the soil was so many feet deep, and now because of our cultivation practices, we have allowed it to keep blowing on much too quickly. So, yeah.
Another dust bowl in the formation? Is this where we've dug up the prairie, which was fine with the grass cover?
Right, and so many people. There's a beautiful essay by Wes Jackson, who is a champion of not planting annual grasses and annual vegetables and annual wheats and grains, but going back to perennial grasses, which have 8 and 10 foot deep root systems. And so you don't cultivate the soil each year and stir up and let it blow away. You plant perennially so that the soil is intact.
I want to come back to what Paul had actually said in his call, which is something that is right in the middle of here. Humans owe their existence to a 6-inch layer of topsoil and the fact that it rains.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty concise way to look at the importance of dirt to us.
Mm-hmm. And don't we all need to be humbled? Because that is, it's such a simple, easy, beautiful way to live. Why be all complex? And I don't know. I love simplicity. And dirt reads that riot act to you repeatedly over and over again. And if you abuse it, it lets you know in big ways.
Well, and it was one of the earlier writers in the book. I'm trying to find it here. Erica Olson, I guess it was, who said, there's lots of reason to dig in the dirt. You know, you're gonna put things in it to grow. You're gonna put dead people in it when they're gone. All that. So I mean, we use it. We expect it to be there for everything we need.
And it has absorbed every single living creature that has ever, plant or animal, that has ever been on this earth. And look what a clean earth we have. I mean, it's a beautiful system. It's a magnificent system.
Julene Bear appears in here. We had her on a few months ago to talk about Ogallala Road, her book, which is a great, it's almost painting, the way she paints the landscape of her native Kansas and all that. And she makes us think about the agricultural aspects of the Dust Bowl, but some of the stories that came down in her family about the Dirty 30s and the amount of dust and dirt that collected in houses still shocks to this day.
And it could happen again, although because we have so much technology, it won't be allowed to happen in the same way. But the devastating consequences will be there, yeah.
Let's see. We already talked about tasting dirt. Your own experiences included here. B.K. Lauren, though, has an essay in here about the discussion of dirt as record keeper, which kind of gets back to what we were saying just a moment ago about everything that's ever lived has ended up back in the dirt.
Right. It's magnificent. And I didn't know she was a tracker. She and her brother used to do a lot of tracking, and that occurs in her novel Theft. And it's beautifully described in this essay, which got in Orion. I mean, Orion was so impressed, they printed the essay. So, yeah, I love her work. And those first two paragraphs just knock me out, pretty much make me cry every time I read them.
Bernd Heinrich writes of noticing dirt at age 8, which prompts the question about how many city writers you've got in here, people who never thought about dirt much until they were along in years.
Actually, so the Heinrich essay is gorgeous because he was called to be a scientist because of observing grass blades grow in a black soil. That was his first moment of wonder, which is just so cool. But no, I made sure I got all kinds of writers. So Karen Washington is from the Bronx, and she is like the queen of gardening in the Bronx. She's now a part of the New York Botanical Gardens. She received the James Baird Award, but she started as a single mom living in a poor neighborhood with only like 7-Eleven kind of food, and she transformed city lot after city lot after city lot into community gardens, and she started the first farmers market that served her community. So, yes, there are definitely – when she first started, she thought she could grow papayas in New York City. She had no idea what she was even doing, and she said the first time she ate a homegrown tomato – and let the juice just drip all over her chin. That was just it for her. That was like, this was the meaning of life. And now she and her partners have just bought 3 acres outside of New York City where they grow massive amounts of produce to bring into the poorer neighborhoods in New York.
We have an email here from Barbara No Town Given. She writes, my favorite gardening quote came from an old Sunset magazine. And it read, the soil in your garden is like your bank account. You can't keep making withdrawals without making deposits.
Excellent.
And she says, the sad thing is that this equally true fact about the soil of our forest land is never a part of the debate over logging. The timber industry and so many politicians just believe you can keep making withdrawals without suffering any consequences. Mm-hmm. The below-ground forest is a magic, complex, and fragile ecosystem, writes Barbara.
Yes, yes, yes. And there are Tom Wessels, who's a terrestrial ecologist from Vermont, says that he, even as a scientist, as a soil scientist, he had no idea of the complexity under his feet until a soil biologist came, a young woman, and walked him through the forest and woke him up to the importance of exactly what she was talking about. So even scientists, even people who've devoted their lives to dirt, there's so much more to learn, and we know almost nothing about it. So it's that gorgeous, great mystery that we get to keep discovering.
I'm guessing it probably doesn't happen, but were there ever any chances to assemble a few of the writers at a time who'd never met each other?
Oh, yeah. I had a hoedown.
Really?
Yeah. So we because of the vast nature of this book, we have had 9 different launch readings. This is the 10th, actually. Thank you, Jeannie. And thank you, Ashlyn. So we had 9 different events, but I wanted to make – and so like people who've never met each other met in New York City or met in California and to read together, and we formed new friendships. But I had a hoedown in Colorado to thank all the people from Colorado. I had 9 different people there. We had a hoedown. Pam Houston, B.K. Lauren were there. Julian Bear was there. And I got a bluegrass band, and we danced ourselves crazy and ate all the organic food from off the organic farm. It was K.N. Short has an essay in here. She and her husband have a fight about whether you call it dirt or soil. They hosted us, and we had a beautiful hoedown and sold a lot of books.
That is fun. I was wondering about the crossover of disciplines, though, if you had a chance for the scientists and the poets to get together and compare notes on dirt. And because it sounds like they have a lot to learn from each other based on what you said a few minutes ago.
And because we all adore dirt, there's a natural respect and adoration. Yeah, Karen Washington, the Bronx organic farmer, read with Eben Goodstein, who is a cultural – what is he? He's an economist, but he's such a devoted environmentalist that he teaches the Bard College of Environmental something or other in upstate New York. So they met for the first time. Yeah, so you got a numbers brainiac and an urban gardener getting it on and having a good time.
That's fun. Well, you know, the book is called Dirt, A Love Story, but then there is an essay called Dirt in Love, which would appear to turn the equation around. So what's happening there?
While I was dreaming up this book, I was lucky enough to be adopted by this kind couple north of Boulder, Colorado, who ran – well, they lived on a commune, but it wasn't a hippie commune.
Is this Thea and Lele?
Thea and Lele, uh-huh. So he's an Italian. He was a metal worker, and she was this amazing clay artist. And they met on – she was on vacation in Italy, taking a break from art school in London – and she met this amazing Italian anarchist, and they fell in love. And she was supposed to go back home and blah, blah, blah. But instead, she just flew right back to Italy and taught him how to build her a kiln, how to gather the clay, how to do – and so they're now art potters in Boulder and have a beautiful, beautiful home and cook gorgeous organic food and have a huge organic garden. So,
an adobe house, I understand.
They built their house from adobe. Oh, my goodness. Theo was so – patient. It took 7 years building this adobe, and of course Lele is an artist, so it had to, the walls had to be beautiful hand smooth silt and blah blah. And she said at one point, like year 5, she walked into this hull of a house and seeds had sprouted from all the grout seams, and her house looked like a giant chia pet. And they're still married is what I want to tell you.
Wow. Was it you or was it somebody else in the book who talked about tasting adobe houses and could taste the difference between them?
Oh, that was such an honor. Roxanne Swensel is a magnificent Pueblo sculptor. She has a sculpture in the Denver Art Museum that's almost, it's probably 10, 15, 18 feet high of this gorgeous giant mud mother woman. And she made it out of literally raw mud and straw. It's not fired. It's so organic. So I fell in love with this work and wrote to her. And she wrote a very brief essay about growing up in the Pueblo and knowing the taste of every home, and her mother's home's walls tasted the sweetest. Yeah.
Wow. That's truly us in love with dirt and dirt in love with us, as you point out in your essay. So, Jeannie, you wrote an essay called Sinking Down into Heaven. And at one point you asked your dad about town people and dirt. What was that about?
My dad was a pretty we were poor, but he was proud. And I remember one day I was in the garden. I'd been gardening all day, and I stood up and I thought, how do town people ever go through life without loving a piece of land? So I asked him at supper that night, and he was a big man, 6'3", 230 pounds, and he said, you know, we were farmers in the Depression, and the town people, no one had work. They didn't have jobs. They didn't have anything. But guess what? They were hungry, and they came out to us, and we gave them food. For once, we had something they wanted. He said, that's what having land means.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, he was riled up.
You mentioned earlier about your relationship with dirt you felt was finished forever. when you buried your grandmother. How long before you felt like you wanted to come back and be around it again?
I was probably in my late 20s. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it took a few years.
Yeah. My kids were in preschool, and one of their teachers sent home a little tiny yellow rose plant in one of those small clay pots for Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And all the leaves fell off the counter. You know, I had it on the kitchen counter, and I thought, well, I'll just put it in the front yard. So I found a sunny spot, and I just put it there because the kids gave it to me. And then it blossomed, you know, that summer. And then I started planting more rose plants. And it was a slow thing, but once it started, it took off.
Well, that's interesting. It was an accidental return to the
It was an accidental return.
But are there any accidents, really?
Yeah.
You know?
Dirt had
it in for her from the...
I've been missing it.
Dirt was smitten with you enough to want you back?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dirt facts. There's a whole section here. Is this the domain of the scientist primarily?
It is, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But I browbeat every one of them into being personal as well. So the essays are hopefully personal essays as well as scientific essays.
Well, Tyler Volk says that dirt resists our efforts to decipher it. That's mm-hmm. a really interesting statement.
He is a magnificent writer and thinker, and I adore Tyler so much. And I love the very first, let me read you the first line.
Okay.
I have it here.
This very dog-eared book with
all my favorite quotes. Soil seems like passive stuff when I ramble over it during woodland searches for birds, but when I sit at my computer assembling data at the planetary scale, the soil reveals itself as one of the most active organisms in the Earth's body, organs in the Earth's body. And then he goes on to talk about breathing. He calculates global breathing of carbon outtake and oxygen input. I mean, I love that he says the Earth breathes and has lungs. I don't think people think that way.
Wow, so. That is pretty amazing. Deborah Coons Garcia mm-hmm. Writes that most people are soil blind. What don't we notice, most of us, does she think?
Oh, don't you think everyone listening, unless you're a dirt nerd like those of us here talking, almost everyone's dirt blind. They take it for granted. And she, Deborah Coons Garcia is a filmmaker, and she did a gorgeous film about soil called The Symphony of the Soil. And she said she set up the first shot, and the cameramen were ready, and she said, action, camera, go. And he's, like, looking at dirt. Like, so she had to spend the next year figuring out, how do you tell dirt's story and make it fascinating? And she did, and I think my book does too, making dirt come alive, making dirt re-enter our consciousness as something that we interact with continually, even though we avoid admitting that.
Both of you are obviously sighted with soil. There's no soil blindness in this room.
Well, there's so much to learn, but mm-hmm. yeah, hoping to learn more.
Well, mm-hmm. that's what struck me about Tyler Volk's thing, is that there's just a lot we don't know.
Oh, some scientists in here say we know practically nothing. They have only begun to scratch the surface. Diana,
no pun intended.
Tim just talks about that. Diana Wall is they call her the worm herder because she's a fantastic soil scientist who has gone to Antarctica for years and years and years to superheat a little patch of dirt in Antarctica with covered, you know, roofs in order to see what happens when you raise the Earth's temperature 1 degree or 2 degrees, what happens to the microorganisms. And because in Antarctica it's only wildly complex, not like massively complex, she's studying the little – so all the pilots who drop her off in at the base call her the worm herder because they figure she's down there herding worms into her little a tent.
So what would either of you say to entice people who do not like to experience dirt to read this? I mean, can somebody appreciate the book if they would much rather be inside with their hands completely clean and their fingernails closely clipped?
Oh, I think so. When I first read all the essays, and I've known Barb a long time, mm-hmm. we talked and I said, you know, I finished the anthology and what struck me was the sincerity of every essay. And then you said, everyone has that. Everyone uses that word, sincerity.
Oh, yeah. I have heard that again and again and again. So even the highfalutin amazing scientists really do get very humble. It's humble. It's humble. And the thing is, so on a radio interview, the man who was interviewing said, oh, I never get in the dirt. Oh, I ski. I do this. I like hiking, but I don't get in the dirt. And then he said, but you know, I've got this pot out on my deck, and I grew a tomato this year. And he went on and on about the flavor of the tomato. I'm like, it's dirt, you know, even potting soil.
Yeah.
So I think we all love dirt.